Andrew Blum has got a book out called Tubes, which is actually the search for the internet. You know, you hear about the internet, but, you know, where is it exactly? And that's the question. He actually pretty much got closest to finding where it actually is. And if it's called Tubes because it is actually Tubes, I think. We'll find out. He's on line with us now from Brooklyn. Site of the squirrel outage, right, Andrew?
Yep.
The big squirrel outage of what year was that?
That was the squirrel outage of 2009.
2009, and that was a squirrel nibbling through what?
My internet.
Your internet. See, now, what does that mean, then? Where is your internet?
Well, as the guy told me, it was my piece of the internet in the backyard behind my building in Brooklyn. And he sort of looked around, said, see a big jumble of cables here, but it must be that guy with the buck teeth. And he said, I think a squirrel is chewing on your internet.
Have you thought of a smoke bomb to get rid of those guys?
It could have worked. The internet probably would have gone with it.
Yeah. Now, and that brings up, you know, the first thing that occurs is that a lot of this stuff is archaic. The connections and the wires and the tubes and so forth really go back to the 1930s when they wired it up, you know, for phones, and or maybe goes back to telegraph days, some of these junctions.
Yeah, the patterns are always the same. You know, yeah. the highest traffic route today in the U.S. is from New York to Washington, and the first working telegraph route was from Washington to Baltimore, so it's the same lines.
Yeah, same lines. And you think a lot of it goes over landlines, or just these old-fashioned phone lines, right?
Yeah, now it's all, you know, at least at the middle of the network. The big pieces have been replaced. The copper's been pulled out and fiber optic lines have been put in.
Okay, so that's an improvement then.
Yeah.
It's no longer the telegraph. But back in the days when AT&T actually was telephone and telegraph, that's pretty much gone?
Those old copper lines have been gone. And some of them, you know, they can't get rid of them, though. They're these buildings that are filled with old copper lines. And they say there's a fortune to be made in copper mining there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that someone's found them already, probably. And so it turns out Ted Stevens said this famous thing, the internet is tubes. But he was right.
He was right.
Senator Stevens, the late. Yeah. Why was he right?
Well, we all laughed at him, you know, because the internet is a transcendent idea. It's this, you know, set of protocols that has changed our lives and causes revolutions and changes dating and grocery delivery and all these things. But we completely forgotten that it's also these very distinct, you know, physical lines between all of us. You know, it's actually a series of tubes, and you can call them conduits or pipes or whatever technical term you want, but I pretty much know a tube when I see one.
They are tubes. Are the tubes, are they big tubes, little tubes? I suppose all size tubes? And
all size tubes. Yeah. All size tubes.
Yeah. We're not talking conduit exactly. We're talking about fiber optic
cables,
or what are they exactly?
Well, often, so you'll have a, you know, on the side of the road, you'll have a thick cable, like about a garden hose, maybe even a little thicker than that. Mm-hmm. And inside of it, there might be 150 or 200 strands of fiber, you know, each as thick as a hair,
yeah,
you know, set up in these ribbons. But then in the buildings where the networks of the internet connect to each other,
yeah,
the actual places that are the kind of the sort of, you know, distribution depots for the internet, mm-hmm, there you've got these yellow fiber optic cables. And the whole, you know, the ceiling is filled with them. You can't even see the ceiling because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And those are tubes filled with light.
Yeah. And but, you know, this kind of reminds me of Kafka, your quest here, you know? Like, like looking for the castle and you never get any closer to it, you know? Or trying to find the court where you're on trial and you can't find the court and you don't know where it's being held. It's in the internet sort of like that. It's hard to find out exactly where it truly is or even get to it.
The funny thing was that it turns out there are only about a dozen buildings in the world that are far more important than all the others.
Uh-huh.
And so those dozen were pretty easy to find and, in fact, pretty easy to get inside because they're busy places. You know, every network that connects, you know, to another network inside these buildings, they've all got a key and they all said, oh, come on over, I'll show you around.
Yeah.
But the Kafka moment for me was, you know, traveling halfway across the world, opening door after door after door to see the sort of the center of the internet, the router that, you know, is the, you know, biggest router in Germany, say this place in Frankfurt, and then getting to the same place in Amsterdam, and it was the same machine. You know, so I think the crown jewels were identical.
Yeah, was that the MLX-32?
That was the MLX-32. Yeah. That's the one.
What a beauty, though.
It is a beauty. Yeah. Blinking lights, yellow cables.
It's a sweetheart, that machine. Hard to believe there's rodents inside powering the thing. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so that's that. But you know, like when you went to the Dalles in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
Would they actually let you? Now, this is where all this stuff is stored. I mean, which is really ballgame, isn't it? Who owns the information or who stores it when you come right down to it? And that was the Google one, right, in Oregon?
That was the Google one. But there I didn't get inside.
Yeah, you got into the lunchroom, right?
They gave me a really nice tour of the parking lot. And then they showed me the Googler's organic garden. But it was wintertime, so it's just kind of a little patch of dirt.
All the perks they get at Google. It's
all the perks. And then they took me to lunch, you know, delicious lunch, this great organic salmon and flank steak and these really good little peanut butter cups with like little sprinkles on top.
Yeah.
And then they said, please tell Andrew how much you like working for Google and how many people applied for your job. It was a strange moment. You know, this is the company that knows the most about us, but was among the dozens of places that I visited, the one that was least willing to tell me about what they did.
Yeah, and it's true. If you ever had any dealings with Google in general, like my Gmail was all messed up one time. I'd been hijacked, and some guy in Bulgaria was sending out calls for money saying I was busted there and beaten up and send money to all my relatives. So I thought, you know, try to get a hold of Google, and they actually, you can't reach them.
Yeah.
You can send out a generic sort of email, and it goes somewhere, but it doesn't do any good. And you just got to do it yourself, basically, to get out. And someone told me that they don't even have phones at their desk at Google.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that.
The phone never rings.
When I said I was disappointed not to have gotten to see inside their data center when I'd seen inside of so many other buildings, and they said that, well, governors and senators have been disappointed too.
Well, isn't that a little bit scary? I mean, isn't that because when you think about it, I mean, this whole thing is about the information, right? And who has it, and who stores it. It's not so much about transmitting it anymore. It's more about who keeps the results of it. And Google and Amazon and all these and Apple and all these people with their so-called clouds. And none of us really has access to it.
Yeah, and it's certainly not a cloud. I mean, that's the thing. It's these, you know, big factory-like buildings.
Yeah. I mean, did that disillusion you, perhaps? Or illusion you?
Well, the funny thing was Google was the one who was different from all the others.
Yeah. Okay.
My visit to Facebook, for example, and I suppose there's a joke about privacy being made in here, but they were wide open. They said, oh, we'll show you every nook and cranny of our building. You know, we'll tell you all about it.
Yeah.
They published the plans. You know, it's a whole big thing.
Oh, okay.
But that also means to me that they take seriously that this place where they store the information is filled with important things. It's filled with our things. And we have some right to understand what's in there.
Yeah. Going back to the history of this whole thing, this originally was what the Internet Working Networking Network, or something like that, a bunch of bulletin boards at MIT or something. Is that how the Internet started?
Well, the original sort of start, the kind of predecessor, was the ARPANET.
ARPANET,
which was the network of universities and some military agencies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of first network of computers. And then in 1984, that network connected to the other networks that had grown, and then you have a network of networks, which is the inter-network.
Inter-networking. Inter-networking network. And then when did it actually pass on to the general population? That was in the late 80s?
Well, to that, we have to talk about Al Gore.
Yes, Al Gore, who invented it. We know that.
Right. It was his piece of legislation that sort of essentially privatized it, and in privatizing it, allowed all the sort of countries to then boom in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, let's not treat this as a government-owned network anymore. Let's have the government fund these first access points for all the other networks to connect to each other. And that piece of legislation, the Gore Bill, the National Supercomputing Act, 1994, that was what laid the groundwork for the boom of the late 90s.
Yeah. And wasn't a lot of this was like sort of like the rappers, you know, you had East Coast, West Coast, didn't you, going on there? There was a war, sort of a war going on in development.
You did. I hadn't thought of it that way. But that's indicative of the fact that the speed of light isn't quite fast enough. You know, you got to be on both sides of the country for all these machines to talk to each other properly.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of development and origination of various protocols and so forth, there was some stuff was going on in Palo Alto and some stuff was going on in Virginia or wherever, or in D.C.
Yeah, those have always been the two poles. And in fact, those are still the two most important places, amazingly, for the infrastructure itself.
Yeah. I mean, how did that come to be, that polarity?
Well, there's always, with these stories, if you ask this question about where is the Internet, there's always kind of some fact of geography. You know, it's like it's there because of some history, whether the building in Lower Manhattan is kind of at the elbow of Lower Manhattan and the first way out of town, the Holland Tunnel. But then there's always some charismatic salesman. There's always somebody who said, you know, who convinced two networks to come, often by lying to each of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And then because those two networks connected to each other in a given place, everybody else came you know, piled on and connected to each other there as well.
Yeah. And there was, in D.C., wasn't it like a Sprint phone building or something?
There was a Sprint phone building for a little while, yeah. And there was a place in the you know, basement parking garage called May East, all through the late 90s.
In a parking garage.
It was cinder block enclosure in a parking garage in the middle of Tyson's Corner, Virginia.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that where the guy said if we took a chainsaw in here that we could really do something for Homeland Security or something?
That was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That was in Milwaukee, okay. So Milwaukee is the center of the internet, which is... We're very close to Milwaukee.
I know.
Dangerously close. The Milwaukee is really, actually, what you're saying is the center of the internet, where it all began.
Right. The focus. There is a building in there that could easily be a backdrop for Goonies, but it is the place where southeastern Wisconsin gets its internet from.
Yeah, and was it instrumental in the development stage? And because we have the two poles on either coast, was it kind of a central the part of the country outpost for the internet development?
No, I've never heard anyone describe.
No. But the beer sure is good, hey. And what about them brewers?
And there's a sub shop in the lobby. That helps.
Yeah, sub shop in the lobby. Well, it's interesting, though. And there was something. Oh, and there's the map. The guy who does the maps, they're in Milwaukee, aren't they?
The maps are printed in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
At Kuban Nicholson, Printers of the Humongous.
Printers of the Humongous, is that what they call themselves?
That's what they call themselves.
Well, that's cool. And that's kind of interesting because what you're looking for is something tangible here that is actually the internet, the actual hardwiring, whatever, the machine of it. And... They actually have the map, and you said as you were traveling around to all these different outposts, they all had this map up on the wall showing, you know, where they were on the map.
Yeah, that's how I knew I was on the internet. There were always a couple clues. There was always that same map. They always had it framed. There was always like a cardboard Cisco box, you know, tossed in the corner, you know, that, you know, some shipping box that hadn't been thrown out yet. And there was always a very specific smell.
And how would you describe that?
It's a little bit like burnt toast. A little bit sort of new car, burning plastic smell, and a lot of air conditioner. But anytime you walk into the internet, there's always the same smell.
Yeah, and guys with laptops with bumper stickers on them.
Guys with laptops and bumper stickers and hoodies sitting on some hard floor, usually sort of, you know, with this very upset look on their face. But if they're there sitting on the floor, inevitably something is broken.
Yeah. Now, I mean, and these guys are the high priests of this. Is it at all, it's probably not upsetting to you because you're a young feller, but... us older types thinking, you know, these are the guys now who are the new high priests of our culture, you know, and these guys, you know, we've all seen them. We used to laugh them off in high school, you know, when they still had slide rules in their pockets, and yeah. Pocket protectors and all that. Now it's kind of an amazing social development, I guess, if nothing else.
Well, the funny thing is that the real hotshots, all of them are 42.
Okay, now they are, but they weren't always.
Well, they all started at the same time.
Yeah, so yeah. The hot shots, but the new ones now are probably like 16, right? The new hot shots.
The new ones are 16. Although the 42-year-olds keep the 16-year-olds in check. But this is kind of a subset. These aren't the network guys. These are the internet work guys. These are the kind of diplomats of IT guys.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now this whole thing about the cloud. Now all I hear about is cloud, 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 cloud. Cloud is very much not a cloud.
No.
What is it then if it's not a cloud? I like to think of it as a cloud. Everyone likes to think of it as a cloud, you know, an Amazon cloud. It comes in, there's sunshine comes through it, blesses you with all things that Amazon can bestow and so forth.
Right. No, well, cloud basically means that you're exchanging the hard drive on your desk and the computer on your desk for a hard drive, a bigger hard drive, and a bigger computer somewhere far away in some warehouse in Oregon or Illinois or North Carolina or someplace where power is cheap. And ideally, the air is cool, so you can save power by not having to air condition as much.
Yeah.
And the tax breaks are good. So that always helps.
Yeah. So, and where would these places be?
For example, Amazon has a big data center in Oregon.
Okay.
Another one in Virginia, which was hit by lightning last week.
Wow, that was...
Taking Netflix and Pinterest and Instagram and other cloud favorites down with it.
Yeah. Which brings, you know, and then that shows people's dependency on this. I mean, this is an amazing, like, let's say even in 10 years, you know, a little longer than that maybe, but in the past 10 years, the dependency that people, this is like, you know, these are like heart-lung machines to a lot of the population now. So if it goes down, you know, how do they breathe?
Right. And they break. You know, they don't break often, but the squirrels get to them, the power goes out, you know, the guys in the hoodies screw up somehow, and then we all get very upset about it. Yeah. You know, my premise is we should at least know where it is. You know, we're going to get upset about it, we should know what color the walls are.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we have absolutely no input into any of it, right? I mean, you used to think the internet was really a democratic by nature institution, originally. You know, no advertising, anybody could put anything out there, or access anything that was out there, no fee, and that's certainly not what it is now.
Well, now it's entirely privately owned networks.
Yeah.
You know, there is no public internet.
Yeah.
But the flip side is, you know, yes, we have no input into it, but we don't really demand any.
Oh.
And we could. You know, I mean, I was in Portland, Oregon a few weeks ago, and in Portland they have artisanal everything, right? They told me about an artisanal pencil sharpener who's been making it. And when you ask a group of people in Portland where they get their internet from, they all say, Comcast, you know, where else would we get it?
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, we could all have sort of artisanal internet. You know, we could demand that the ISPs, you know, both offer better service and aren't spying on us and protect our privacy in different ways, rather than just saying, Comcast, I guess that's it for our only choice for the primary source of all information.
Mm-hmm.
And they were signing a petition. They were all ready to go. The crowd was riled up.
Nothing happened with that so far. And then, of course, Congress sort of regulates it. Do they or don't they? How is this all regulated? I know Ted Stevens is not there anymore to regulate it.
Ted Stevens is not there anymore, yeah. No. Oh, I'm sort of sorry he's not here to enjoy his...
the fruits of his labor.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. I did hear from his son-in-law,
mm-hmm.
Who told me that their home Wi-Fi network is named Nugget Tubes. Tubes in Ted's honor and Nugget named after their cockapoo.
And did you actually meet Danny from Danny's hard drive?
No. Yeah, no, but I tracked her down. I spent a good 2 days trying to find Danny, the late 1990s internet porn star.
The porn star, yeah. Which is really what the internet turns out to be all about anyhow. It's an amazing way of distributing pornography.
The network engineer expression is that the internet runs on porn.
Yeah.
That is the source of all technological advancement.
That's the engine. And everything else is just a byproduct of the amazingly successful porn industry. In doing all this and going to all these places and exploring, you know, really making it all tangible, what surprised you the most in what you discovered?
I was really surprised by how little of it there was and how few people were kind of in charge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, it's these dozen buildings in the world that are by far the most important places where the networks connect to each other physically. You know, the big refrigerator-sized router of one network connected to the big refrigerator-sized router of another network. You know, Comcast to a Facebook, a Google to a Time Warner, whatever it is. And then about 300 people who seem to be calling most of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they meet three times a year at their conference. You know, we go to conferences to network. They actually go to conferences to network. You know, they take that very literally.
They drink a lot of beer
and they decide to connect their networks to each other.
They're physically in the same presence as one another. That must be quite a shock for some of them.
That's the thing, is they all need to develop these really trusting relationships in order to know that if they connect one network to another, the other person won't screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
They say the other person has to be clueful, which is the opposite of clueless.
I never liked these guys in high school, and I don't know if I like them now. But that is kind of interesting.
I hope your internet still works when you get home this afternoon.
Yeah, yeah, my internet could be out, and that'll be it. I have a denial of service from someone other than my wife. And then we're always told that the internet 2.0 or whatever the next internet is supposed to be is on the horizon, and is it? And or where the heck is it?
I Milwaukee maybe. I don't know. I mean, the evolution's going to be slow. I think that we won't rest until we have enough bandwidth at home.
Bandwidth
to do enough, you know, that our connection is fast enough to do, I think, two-way video conferencing on a really big screen.
Yeah.
You know, my 3-year-old thinks that telephones are things you look at, and I think we're not going to rest until we have that sort of that big Jetsons video wall in our living rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
Two-way.
Yeah. But is there such a thing? I saw some people were writing about it, saying it's on the horizon now. It's being developed somewhere, MIT again, or one of those places. And it's all the transmission is quite different. and all the networking is quite different. It surpasses all these current systems that are really kind of low level in a way. Is it true or not? Is it out there or am I dreaming? Is it science fiction?
It's somewhere in between. Yeah. It's a theoretical project. It will eventually sort of filter to the rest of us,
yeah.
But it's not like anyone's going to flip a switch and suddenly there's going to be a new internet.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I won't wait for it then.
Don't hold your breath. Yeah.
I was going to wait to buying my router until they got
right.
It. Well, it's very cool. Andrew Blum, Tubes, A Journey to the Center of the Internet, and it's on, what press is that on there?
It's on Echo.
On Echo Press. So thank you for taking the time. Very interesting stuff.
Thank you.
Andrew Blum, Brooklyn, New York. He's been to the internet, and it is good.